may be seated. I feel like there should be an unofficial rule that we should only have one hard reading in our group of readings per week, because it makes it, it's hard for me. I want to talk about them all, and then, you know, but I want to eat breakfast after too, so I've got this struggle. But let's focus on the gospel today. If you're wondering, just as an epilogue and aside, what happened to Ishmael from the first reading? Because people asked me that this morning. What happened to Ishmael? Ishmael is believed to be the father of the Arab nation. So Muslims, Jews, and Christians have all held that Ishmael settled in Arabia and had a great large family and founded basically Saudi Arabia, as we would know it today, and became the father of the Arab nation, and many Muslims consider him to be their heir, or their, not their heir, but their the father of their nation. So that's just a little story from our first reading. But I feel like when we get gospel readings like this, we have to talk about them, because they're hard and they're challenging, and Jesus doesn't sound like Jesus should sound like when we hear it. And we don't like to hear Jesus say stuff like this, and it's really unsettling sometimes, and we don't know what to do with it. So let me help, if I can, a little bit this week, clarifying what Jesus is trying to say. It's still challenging. There's no way I can make it not challenging, but I want you to understand the context of what he's doing. So the first thing is you have to picture where he is and who he's talking to. And so a lot of times I think we picture Jesus maybe talking to like just a crowd of people that just gathers around. I don't know. I picture that. I don't know if you picture. But this is a private conversation. Jesus and his 12 disciples. And he just gave them some marching orders, so to speak, that they're going to go out. I'm going to give you power to go out. You're going to heal. And you're going to cleanse lepers. And you're going to cast out demons in my name. You're going to be able to do it. And they're excited. Of course they're excited. That's kind of a big deal. But then the second half of that is what we read today. He says, wait a minute. Before you go out the door, I kind of picture like a locker room pep talk going on right here. You know, the door is closed. Jesus is like the coach. The disciples are like the players. They're ready to go. And it's like, wait a minute. Before we go, you need to know this. It's going to be hard. It's going to be challenging, because people are going to respond to you the way they respond to me. So I'm polarizing. Not because I go around telling people to hate each other, but because some people hear what I have to say and some people really resist what I have to say. And guess what? They're going to do that to you too. Some people don't like that I challenge power. And some people receive it. And guess what? They're going to do that to you. Some people don't like that I go to the sinners and the outcasts and the lowly and offer them grace and mercy and forgiveness and don't seem to be that thrilled to be around those who are of esteem. And they're going to react that way to you. So just be aware. That's what he's telling the disciples. Just be aware of what's happening. And don't think it's all going to just be roses. It's not. And he makes that comment about division that's so hard to hear sometimes. Don't think I've come to bring peace but a sword. Now, if Jesus only said this, then we would think, wow, Jesus is really trying to tear families apart. But we know that there's a whole body of things Jesus taught and said that give us a little different picture of his mission. But I would hear it this way. It's not that Jesus is going around saying, break up. Family, father, son, go at it. It's not how it works, but by the nature of some people responding to him and some people not, it's causing. So I'll give you a story from my life where I saw this very same thing. I was just a fresh, newly ordained priest. I got ordained in December, so I was getting ready for my first Christmas in New Orleans. Very excited. And of course, as a newly ordained priest, I knew everything about everything. Everything about God, everything about people, everything about church. It was a great sweet spot to be in for about a month until I realized I didn't. But I knew everything about everything. And one of the things every new priest does, it's embarrassing to say, but I admit it. Every new priest does is we think we're the ones who are the great preachers who are going to, win everybody over. So it was my first Christmas, and it was like, oh, all these people have come just for Christmas. Once they hear me preach, they'll be back every week. And then the next week I realized I didn't know what I was talking about. But, you think that as a new priest. You have all this zeal and energy and not a lot of experience or wisdom. So our first Christmas in New Orleans was like Christmas, the church was full, but that wasn't the normal congregation. But there was one family that came back. And it was a man from Germany, and his wife was from India, and they had two beautiful daughters, about 7 or 8 years old. And they were looking for a church, and they found us on Christmas and came back, and we got to know them quite well. And one of the first things I got to do was baptize those two girls. And it was a joy, and they were some of the sweetest people that we met. And the family wanted to be Christian, but the mother, who was from India, did not want to be baptized yet. And we sat down. I remember we went out to eat with them somewhere. We were at their home. I can't remember where it was, but it was over food. Surprise, surprise, it was over food. And we were talking, and she was explaining, it's not that I don't believe in Jesus. It's not that I don't want my children to be raised in the gospel. It's not that I don't want to support my family in this. It's that if I become baptized now, my mother will never speak to me again. And she's old, and she's sick, and I don't know that I can handle that. So I just figure I can wait until she dies, and in a few years I'll be baptized, and it'll be okay. And these are people who are well-educated professionals in the United States and the 21st century. And this is the family dynamic that Jesus is talking about. If she were to say, I'm going to be a Christian and not a Hindu, like my mother and my grandmother and her mother before her, her mother would have said, that's it. You're not my daughter anymore. And that type of stuff happens all the time in other parts of the world. I think we hear that and we think, wow, Jesus, don't be so harsh. But I would think if we were talking with people from the Middle East or Africa or India, that is a very real thing. It's a very real thing. As a matter of fact, one of our priests, when we were in Niagara Falls and we were dating, was from Nigeria. And he told the story that his father-in-law couldn't attend his wedding to his wife because his father-in-law was a pagan and a polygamist. And when his wife wanted to marry a Christian pastor, it caused great distress in the family. They ruptured. They didn't reconcile. So this stuff happens all over the world. When someone makes a commitment to follow Jesus and other people don't understand it or resist it, it causes division. And that's what Jesus is talking about. He's not saying, I'm coming to intentionally split up your family. He's saying that this is a commitment that's going to be polarizing for some people. Maybe you've experienced that in your life. We have. Certainly speaking from my own experience. So I want us to just be clear about that, where Jesus is going with that. And then the last thing he says in this, I think we find troubling. If you don't love me more than father, mother, son, daughter, which is really the one that kind of cuts to the heart for us, right? You're not worthy of me if you don't take up your cross and follow me. You're not worthy of me. And I just want to poke at what I think is our myth that we believe behind that. And it's, we think that love is a finite thing. Like, time is a finite thing, right? Each of us wake up in the morning, we have the same amount of time every day. Money is, in a sense, a finite thing. Now, we all have different amounts of that. But love, sometimes we look at it that way. Like, if I love God with my whole heart, then I have no room for my wife. Right? No room for my daughter. And that's not true. If you have multiple children, you know that. Right? You get to a point in your life where you think, I don't know how I could love another person, you know, more than I love my wife or I love my child. And then you would have another one and you'd say, I don't know how it happened, but my heart kind of multiplied. You know, and I have this heart now. And you see people with 4 kids or 5 kids, and they say the same thing. You know, I don't know how it happens, but your heart kind of multiplies. And love works like that. Love works like that. So what Jesus is getting at is this idea. I think when we hear it, we think, well, there's only so much love to go around. And Jesus would say, what? When you love God with all your heart, it doesn't mean you have less for your wife. It actually means you have more. You have more for your kids. It multiplies. It multiplies. And that's why he says at the very end, if you're looking to save your life, you lose it. And if you're willing to let go, if you're willing to sacrifice, if you're willing to let go for me, you gain it. You actually, by loving me with all your heart, you actually have a capacity to love everyone more, not less. So we hear that and we might think, wow, Jesus, you're being kind of harsh there. You're telling me my family, you know, drops down and they're not important. No, that's not what he's saying. But he's saying you need to understand love isn't finite. And if we love God with all our heart, love multiplies. We can't love less. We love more. And that's challenging for us to think about that. It's challenging for us to think about that. But that's what Jesus is doing. And he's challenging the disciples. This is going to be hard. It's not all going to be roses. But I tend to think the best things in life are hard. Right? Marriage is hard, but worth it. Family is hard, but worth it. If those of you who have, you know, really worked hard and invested in a profession because you make a difference, it's probably hard, requires sacrifice, but hopefully worth it. And Jesus is saying the same thing. You have the ability. I'm sending you out. You have the ability to go and bring God's presence to those places where it's not and see hearts change and see the world change. And it's going to be hard. But it's worth it. But it's worth it. So, no less challenging probably for us than it was for them. But hopefully we can walk away and hear what Jesus was really trying to say and not get hung up on Jesus being maybe nasty or mean or divisive, which was not his intention. It's hard, but it's worth it. But it's worth it. And when we love God first, our ability to love everyone else is multiplied. So if nothing else sticks with you today, and we go off and enjoy this beautiful summer day and work in our gardens or do whatever we want to do today, hope you remember those two things. It's hard, but it's worth it. And if you love God first, your ability to love everyone else, your spouse, your family, your kids, your grandkids, your parents, everyone else around you is multiplied. In the name of God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Amen.